Thank you for checking out Random Musings from the Clinical Trials Guru. It really means a lot to me that you're listening to this podcast. If you listen and you like the content, then make sure you subscribe, make sure you leave a review. Please do that. And also go check me out on some of my other platforms. I have a long-running YouTube channel. I've got a blog, theclinicaltrialsguru.com. If you're interested in becoming a CRA or you're interested in getting a career in this industry, go to thecraacademy.com. If you're a research site owner interested in getting more studies for your site or negotiating better contracts for your site, go to my blog, theclinicaltrialsguru.com, and check it out. I offer consulting services. If you're a pharma, biotech, life sciences company, a CRO, I own a startup CRO, and we're here to help you, whatever it is you want. If you're a CRO, we can white label a lot of services for you. We have CRA coverage across the country at cost. We can do this at scale. If you're a pharma company, we are a full service CRO, and we're very confident in our pricing, and we are extremely competitive at bidding. And if you're also interested in your own digital marketing and leveraging a podcast maybe for yourself, reach out to me, dan@theclinicaltrialsguru.com. Again, thank you very much and enjoy the show. Hey, Guru Nation, welcome back to another episode of Random Musings from the Clinical Trials Guru. This is Dan Sfera. I am here with Chris Sauber. Hello, sir.
Hello.
It is 8 p.m. here in California on this Thursday evening. Chris and I are doing something that we don't have much experience with, but now we do. Writing a protocol synopsis.
Much more than we did yesterday.
And what is a protocol synopsis, Chris?
I think that's self-explanatory, isn't it?
You would be amazed.
Well, basically, you know the summary of a book? Same thing, right?
So it's like the Cliff Notes version of a protocol.
Sure. You read the summary of a book to see if you're interested, and you read protocol synopsis to see if you're interested.
So Chris and I have been tasked by a sponsor to write a protocol, and prior to writing the protocol, we're writing the synopsis. And then hopefully our vendor can pull through for us. They use artificial intelligence, and they're going to, based on the synopsis, come up with a protocol, which we will then have to go in and modify. Because
but if
we
this
don't.
AI is very good, maybe not.
Maybe not. We're going to find out, and we will definitely report to you. Right now, we're on episode 61. We'll probably report back to you on episode 91, maybe. I'll probably do like 30 podcasts between now and then.
When would you imagine we'll be done with the protocol? 2 months from now?
Yeah. I'll easily do 30 podcasts between now.
You think that's a fair guess? 2 months from now?
Yeah. The synopsis will be done.
Say two iterations, maybe three of the synopsis, right?
Yeah, I think the synopsis will be done in 2 or 3 weeks.
I agree. And then a month, maybe a month and a half to write the protocol?
Yeah.
Okay, so yeah, at least 2 months.
Yeah.
Give or take a week or two.
So July to August. So by like late September, we actually can start the study. And I think with a synopsis.
No, no, wait, after you write the protocol, do you go to the IRB prior to the protocol?
Here's what I would recommend. I don't know. Here's what I would do. Once the synopsis is done and agreed upon, yeah, then we go to the IRB and say, do you see any problems with this? Okay. Let us know now so that we can modify our protocol.
Sure. Good point. Right? I'd agree with that.
We don't want to waste all that time. And then they're like, no, this is not good.
After you write 40% of it.
Yeah, so we're going to go talk to the IRBs after the synopsis is done. And then maybe we'll modify again. Or we'll just continue with it. And I'm sure we have to pay them like a fee for that. But
do you have an IRB in mind?
Yeah, I have a few. Local ones, yeah.
Seriously?
Not local IRB, local to us, but they're central IRBs.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
Yeah. They had their sales rep meet with me a bunch of times.
Okay. Are they a little less expensive?
I don't know. We're going to negotiate that, though.
Okay.
So, since we're doing this protocol synopsis, we broke it down for you guys, and we're going to kind of discuss what each thing that warrants discussion entails. So, protocol number... That's obvious. We're not going to get into that.
I got a question. I'm sorry. A little tangent here.
Yeah.
How's it even possible you're answering emails as we're writing a synopsis? You copied me on an email. How are you even
multitask.
Able to, yeah, there's no way I could do that.
I think it was when you were...
Dan's crazy.
Yes. I think it was when you were typing. There was some downtime. I mean, I had time to go to the bathroom. Yeah.
Well, you surely wasn't answering your email when you were in the bathroom, were you?
No, I was doing it when you were typing.
Okay.
Okay, so protocol number, we're not going to get into. That's obvious. Protocol title, you need to come up with it. I would read you ours, but it's going to give away our confidentiality, so I will not. But you got to make a title appropriate to what? Just go on clinicaltrials.gov. You can see as many protocol titles as you want.
Yeah, this is our second edition of this. What's this called? Podcast?
Yeah.
This is the second edition because there are a little too many loose lips going on.
Yeah, yeah. Loose lips sink ships. We can't have that. So if you're really curious about what a protocol title looks like, go on clinicaltrials.gov. Knock yourself out. There's hundreds of thousands. All right? Protocol version, we're not going to get into. Name of treatment. Obviously, it's the name of the treatment. Indication. We're doing a pain study. That's about as far as we can get into it. So, phase. Now, phase four. Ours is phase four, but consult with your legal regulatory counsel for that. Rationale. Can you explain what a rationale is? Study rationale. Study rationale.
Study rationale. That's the purpose of the study. No?
Yes. The purpose and why, I guess, right? The same thing, right? Mm-hmm. Why you're doing the study.
Exactly.
And you uploaded ours into Intralinks?
I did.
Okay. So I'll look at that later. Study objectives and endpoints. This was where you and I were trying to figure out what the difference between the two. And you explained it well. So study objective. What is the difference between a study objective and an endpoint?
So study objective, what are you trying to prove? Endpoint, how are you proving it? Essentially, I think.
Study objective, what are you trying to prove? Mm-hmm. Study endpoint.
So you have primary objectives.
The metrics that you're using to...
Right. So you have a typical synopsis, you have primary objectives and secondary objectives, right? So primary objectives, what's the main focus of the study? But in addition to that main focus or purpose, what also might you be proving by conducting this trial? Okay, so those are the things you're setting out to prove, right?
Okay.
Does this drug help with pain, say, right? Does it make pain any better?
Yeah.
And secondary objective might be, is it less addictive than the comparable, right?
Okay.
Comparables.
Okay.
Endpoint is, so how do we prove these things?
Mm-hmm. Right. And then for both of those, the objective and the endpoint, you have primary, secondary, and an optional exploratory.
Mm-hmm.
So primary objective, you should only have one. If it's a good study,
think, right?
You should have one or two maybe, right?
I've Max. Seen a few studies with two.
How many do we have in ours? One?
Yeah, I think it was just one.
One. And then the primary endpoint is the metric that you're using to measure the mm-hmm. objective, right? Mm-hmm. Secondary objective, secondary endpoint, same thing. What are some other things you're looking at
mm-hmm.
that you're trying to prove? Now, what's the difference between a primary, secondary objective and an endpoint and a primary, secondary, and exploratory objective and endpoint?
Ask the question again, I'm sorry.
So what's the difference between a primary objective and an exploratory objective? Because we had a little issue with this, but you explained it well.
Primary, we know we want to try and prove, right? We know what we're looking at and what we're trying to prove. Exploratory might be something we think might occur, we're just not sure, right?
Just some additional data to collect?
Right, because we did a study a while back at one of our sites, in which they knew they were trying to show that taking this medication would help with quitting smoking. Right?
Yeah.
But they also thought it might help with psychosis, right? It was a study for schizophrenia.
Oh, okay.
They thought it might, but they weren't sure. So that would be their exploratory.
They're just gathering additional data.
Right. So they did a PANS just for that purpose, to see if by chance, if they stopped smoking, would their illness kind of...
Would there be any correlation?
Right.
Okay.
I don't know. That didn't say. I didn't read the synopsis. I just assumed that's what's going on with the exploratory part.
Okay. Now, study design. So the study design also goes in the synopsis. Again, this is all protocol synopsis, okay? Study design. You have a rationale for dose and schedule selection. So you're really, like, during the study design, what you're doing is you're breaking down every visit. So screening visit, randomization visit, maybe a pre-screening visit, maybe a visit 1, 2, 3, 4, and on after randomization, right? Like a week 1, week 2, week 3. However the visits are that you break down and you're designing the study, you need to give a rationale for why you're breaking down the study that way, right? Like, why are you having a pre-screening? Why are you having a screening? Is screening randomization on the same day? Why? Why? What's the purpose? What's the rationale for having a weekly visit? What's the purpose or rationale of having a monthly visit, or a daily visit, depending on the study, right? The study design rationale for the schedule selection.
That actually brings up a good point. In our protocol synopsis, the screening the screening and the randomization could occur on the same day.
They could, but we chose to break it up.
But that may not be standard of care.
Well,
they might be seen and on the same day the procedure's performed.
But the way we wrote it, it gives them that option.
Sure. So they can
the screening can be in the same day.
It's the randomization.
But it doesn't have to be.
We should probably,
well, it's the first iteration of it, so we'll...
Right. It's just dawned on me.
Yeah, but for other studies, it's more clear, like, you know, because they're more complicated, so you have to have a inclusion-exclusion criteria, which is also coming up soon. So rationale for schedule selection. Then you have the study location, so, you know, United States, typically. If you're using other countries, you put United States and whatever other countries they're in, right? Number of planned patients. So this is where you gotta look at your primary endpoints, your secondary endpoints, your exploratory endpoints, and you really should hire a biostatistician to come up with this.
Well, you also need input probably from the FDA as well.
Input from the FDA.
If this is going to be reviewed by the FDA.
Now, if you want to do it on Bootstrap like we did to keep our costs down for our clients, you go to clinicaltrials.gov and you look at previous studies and you can find their rationale for the number of patients, right?
Sure.
Especially when on clinicaltrials.gov, some people may not know this, some of the studies and all the sponsors are required to report results. Many don't comply, but there are results on clinicaltrials.gov. And it will tell you how many patients. And then even if they don't give a rationale for how many patients, if you're doing a similar study, you can follow that model.
Sure.
Right? If you don't want to use a biostatistician. If you do, he'll probably, or she, will probably still follow that model. But they'll give you like a rationale, like a mathematical explanation for why.
But I think I'd take that a step further. If you're submitting to the FDA, I think you always want to have a conversation with the FDA on how many patients are necessary to prove
yes.
endpoints.
In our study, we're not submitting to the FDA.
Right. So
but I learned from Darshan, and our client doesn't even know this. We have to tell them.
They can still be audited.
Yes, because when you enroll a human being in a study, it becomes under the jurisdiction of
regardless
the FDA.
Of the study.
Yep. Yep.
An investigator-initiated trial that they're only conducting at their own site and practice.
Yeah, and I think it still needs to be posted on clinicaltrials.gov.
Really? Even an investigator-initiated trial?
Yep.
Interesting.
So I think our study has to be posted on ct.gov.
Interesting.
So that'll be a first for us as well.
Yeah.
But that'll be interesting. So, number of planned patients. Study population. What kind of people are you enrolling? Are they healthy volunteers? Are they people with schizophrenia? Are they people with asthma? Are they chronic pain sufferers? Who are you enrolling in the study, right? Then you get the inclusion-exclusion criteria. which is, you want to explain that? What is IE criteria?
I'm reading responses to American Express. I'm sorry.
So inclusion, is it good news or bad news from them?
Neither.
Okay, I figured. So inclusion, exclusion criteria. So how do you come up with that?
Inclusion, exclusion criteria?
Yeah, when you're designing a synopsis. I use comparator studies as a starting point.
Well,
and for those watching on YouTube, you can see all this stuff. Yeah, but we use, because yesterday, before we came to collaborate today, I went through a bunch of, but we put it on our sponsor for that. Right. That's what you're about to say.
Exactly.
Yes. But we do have a starting point. Like, let's say they came back to us and said, I don't know, it's up to you guys.
Sure.
It's right here.
And then we're playing a guessing game, kind of.
We're playing a guessing game, yes.
Because we don't know.
We don't know all of them.
Well, right. We don't know, is there a BMI specific to what's safe for this procedure? Yes. We don't know a lot of different.
Because for our particular study, there is no exact comparator.
Right.
There's several similar studies.
Right.
Looking at different endpoints, but using the same procedure, right? Like, I printed out a bunch. There's more. There was, like, 100 using our procedure.
So how does an IRB determine? Do all IRBs have a doctor on board?
Yeah, they have a board. It's a board.
But are they? Is there physicians always on the board?
There's always some physicians, yeah.
Okay.
And then...
I was just wondering, how would they determine whether the inclusion-exclusion criteria is safe to the patient?
Yeah.
Right?
Doctor. Okay. Yeah. What's next? IE criteria. Treatment arms. You want to explain? Treatment arms?
Treatment arms. So, in our particular trial, there's three.
Yeah. Right? And on a one-to-one-to-one ratio.
In studies, you're never treating.
Right. But they're called treatment arms.
Right. So,
and ours is a 1-to-1-to-1 randomization ratio.
Correct. So, depending on how the patient's randomized, and of course, the percentages you're randomizing into each arm, again, for us, it's 33% each, and a third. The patients will be equally randomized to the different treatment arms. Treatment arm is, I think it's self-explanatory. It's just the different possible treatments the patient will undergo depending on how they're randomized into the trial.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's kind of self-explanatory, yeah. You know?
You're usually comparing, actually, where's that paper I gave you on different kind of studies? I think it's that one.
This one?
Yeah. Let's break it down for people. No, this is not this one. There was one where, right here.
Where,
underneath all your cans. I drank a lot today, too. It's Diet Coke for those listening.
Yeah.
It was almost beer. It was a coin flip away from being beer, but it landed tails.
That it did.
And we're not kidding.
Yeah, it's honest to God truth.
So instead it was Diet Coke, coffee, and a Perrier for me. Okay, so... what was it? Okay, there's two different kinds of studies, right? There's observational studies and there's interventional studies, or they're also called experimental. So observational, maybe it's self-explanatory, but you want to break it down for people?
Well, I would think observationals, would you say it's always a phase 4 trial, observational?
Not always, no. No.
There could be a phase 3 or 2 or...
Yes.
And one that's observational?
Yeah. So let me read from this Institute for Work and Health from somewhere. I don't know where it is. But they break it down. Observational studies are ones where researchers observe the effect of a risk factor, a diagnostic test, treatment, or other intervention without trying to change who is or isn't exposed to it.
So why would you do an observational study as a phase 2?
I don't know.
I think it's strictly phase 4.
I don't know, but I am interviewing Darshan tomorrow.
Yeah, ask him.
I will ask him. That will be episode 62 or 63.
Yeah, there you go.
So I'm doing 3 interviews tomorrow. You know whose interviews I'm doing tomorrow? Our student from the CRA Academy. Free plug for anyone listening. Go to www.thecraacademy.com. Our student who just got hired. I'm interviewing him tomorrow.
Yeah.
So that'll be episode.
Good. I recommended that.
Thank you. That'll be episode 62.
And what it takes to get hired.
Yes. I'm interviewing a doctor who's himself running a study, investigator-initiated study. He just reached out to me out of the blue. I don't even know what we're talking about, but I'm using it.
He'd be open being recorded on an interview?
Yeah. He said, yeah. I think you know what it is? They're using Apple Watch for some study data. So, but I'm using it as a marketing opportunity to get him as a client.
Okay, good.
So that's episode 63, and then Darshan is 64.
Wow, three.
Three tomorrow. And I got the videographer, and I got an intern.
Might well be beyond 90 by the time the protocol's done.
That's what I'm saying. So anyways, in observational studies, you use cohorts, okay? A cohort, for research purposes, a cohort is any group of people who are linked in some way. For instance, a birth cohort includes all people born within a given time frame. Researchers compare what happens to members of the cohort that have been exposed to a particular variable to what happens to the other members who have not been exposed. This is pure observation.
Sure.
You're like God looking at us in a fishbowl.
Right.
Right. Not to get too religious here. Now, interventional or experimental studies, which is the one we're doing. Experimental studies are ones where researchers introduce an intervention and study the effects. So they have control groups, right? So this brings us to the randomization part, rationale. You have at least the intervention, experimental intervention, or a control group.
Which could be placebo or comparable.
Or comparable. In our case, we have intervention one.
Right?
No, we have intervention one, intervention two, or
kind of
control. Control. Right.
I mean, they're not
it's not placebo, but it's control.
Yeah. Right.
So we have one-to-one-to-one. But if we were just studying one of our two treatments, we would just have a one-to-one. But since we're studying two, we want to see which one's better. That's the primary endpoint.
Right.
If any are better, we're doing it one-to-one-to-one.
Then the standard or control.
That's right. So the rest, you treatment arms, okay, then you do a visit schedule. So our favorite is the schedule of assessments, right? Where you really break down on a flow chart what happens at each visit, what assessments. Then you get into biostatistics stuff like safety, statistical method, interim analysis, sample size determination. This is where you want to employ like a biostatistician or a medical writer, right?
Right.
So anything else you want to add, sir?
Investigative brochure would be fun.
The IB.
Yeah.
Yeah, no way. No, thank you. That is crazy. No AI in the world can help you. I think that they can, actually.
Think it would be easier than a protocol.
For the AI, yeah.
Yeah, I think it would be.
I think it would be, too. I think you can outsource that.
Yeah.
Anything else?
No.
Thank you, everyone, for listening or watching, and we'll talk to you all soon. Bye-bye. So, hey, everybody. Thank you very much for listening to another episode of Random Musings from the Clinical Trials Guru. Again, if you haven't already, make sure you subscribe to this podcast. Make sure you leave a review, if you could be so kind, please. And also go to theclinicaltrialsguru.com if you're interested in learning more about who I am, who some of my guests are. You can have access to some of my YouTube videos. I do a lot of videos about clinical research. So go to theclinicaltrialsguru.com. And you can also call or text me anytime, 949-415-6256. Also follow me on any social media platform. It's Dan Svera. And you can also email me if you'd like, dan@theclinicaltrialsguru.com. Thank you very much.